today we're going to talk about remote working as the main topic, because Juliana recently made quite a bit of news when she took her company fully remote, and this happened in August 2023. Right, so maybe just to start, Juliana, could you tell us about your company and what you do, and how big is your company?
Well, I guess to start, I want to share that I'm a scientist turned entrepreneur. In 2018, I started my own company called Wild Tide Media Group, and we publish books, magazines, social media, etc. And we were always kind of a office-bound, in-person company. And all of that changed, of course, in the pandemic, mm-hmm. when we had the circuit breaker in Singapore in March 2020, and we went remote. So fast forward to August 2023, which, as you mentioned, I decided to end my lease and truly, truly go remote.
So it was just nice at August 2023 that your lease was ending anyway.
Yes.
So it was a bit of a kind of like fates were aligned kind of thing. Like it was going to happen. Then it made you think about it.
Well, that's the short story. But there's a longer story, because if you think about it, some of us who are a little bit older still remember the SARS crisis. And if any of you recall, the worst case scenario we all predicted was a 3-month circuit breaker.
Right.
That's the worst case scenario. Yeah. We weren't thinking 3 years, guys. So all we were thinking of is, okay, great, we work from home for 3 months. And it so happened, Wei Chun, that as I mentioned, August, right? So I had to renew my lease in 2020. So I talked to all these, you know, cool entrepreneurs and CEOs who have a lot more experience than me. They run like giant teams, like 1,000 people. And they all said, okay, we're going to go through a 3-month SARS-like crisis,
right.
And then the economy will bounce back ferociously. And you got to get prepared, because you're not going to like shrink. You got to get ready. You got to even double up.
Right.
So nobody thought it was going to last 3 years. So instead, I took a bigger office lease. I renovated it. It cost me $30,000 just to get it into a shape that I like, you know, glass office, studio with soundproof walls, laminated floors, in anticipation of that bounce back. But it didn't happen because Delta, Omicron. So it got more and more and more remote for me, to the point that so-called, you know, renovated office was more or less unused for about 3 years. So that's the long story.
Wow. Yeah, because I remember visiting then, and even then it was like, wow, got a lot of things. Y'all got recording studio, everything, but nobody around. It was very empty, and it was like that throughout the whole 3 years.
I would say so. Because we do have magazines, so we have to come and pack it. But we're talking about maybe 6 times a year, 12 times a year.
So it became a warehouse.
Pretty much a warehouse.
Wow. So when you made the jump to go like fully work remote, right? Or work from home, right? Fully work from home. Is that what you call it? Or work from anywhere?
I call it remote work.
Flexible work.
Flexible work from anywhere. WHA. Right.
So when you made that jump, was it jarring to you and your colleagues?
Okay, you're asking a very sensitive question for many people, because there's always that employer versus employee, conflict, right?
Yeah.
But actually, the more I think about it, even though I'm an employer and a founder, I'm also an employee of my own company. And to be honest with you, remote work is liberating.
Remote work is
the best thing that was invented since sliced bread. Because you see, let me explain, okay? I have 2 kids and I would love to spend more time with them. I love having not to, you know, have to change into my clothes, put on my makeup. That at least takes 30 minutes to an hour. And then you have to decompress after you reach home, travel, of course. You know, buy lots of clothes or queue up for lunch, you know, coffee breaks, everything. Yeah. I save pretty much 2 to 3 hours a day. So I love remote work. Do you know, if you think about saving 2 hours a day, that is 10 hours a week. So you actually work 1 day less, guys, if you work remote.
Yes, I remember seeing you do a calculation on a post. I think it might be LinkedIn.
Yeah, that went viral. To cut the long story short, you save 1 month of your life.
Every year?
Every year.
Wow.
So it is at least from the employee side.
If you are a remote worker.
Yeah. Right, because employer also employee.
I guess, but I mean...
I'm also, we are all employees.
But I guess like the usual employer argument would care about like, I mean, you save time, but how much of this time is going to being more productive at work?
Yeah, so that will, you know, we are going to go into a different, a different area, which is productivity and, you know...
Yeah.
Output.
outputs, right. You know, stuff like that.
But I mean, you seem like a pretty progressive employer. Mm. So you probably will not tie how hard people are working to actually like productivity. Because, you know, time spent doesn't always equal productivity, right?
Ruimin, you talked about productivity, and I think there is it's very important for us to clarify there are two different ways of looking at productivity. So there's the employee productivity. Yay, sure. I save one day a week, mm-hmm. save a lot of money, I can cook healthy lunches, I can go to the gym or take a run. You know, all of this is making me feel more productive. Yeah. I can finish my work in a shorter amount of time, and because I don't commute, I'm definitely more productive because you can finish 8 hours of work in 8 hours, not 10 hours where you have commute time. Mm. But you also have to look at the output of that person as part of a team and part of a company. Mm-hmm. And there are studies, unfortunately, by some of the top researchers at Stanford, specifically one guy called Nicholas Bloom, who is the leading voice of remote work research, that shows productivity of remote firms are lower by 10 to 20%.
So productivity in this case, in this study, is measured output. As output. Mm. So just the raw amount of work that is done.
I wouldn't say raw, but whatever the output is measured. They did studies, not this specific researcher, but he cited studies that other researchers did on a Fortune 500 companies. Company that had an in-person data center, call center, and a remote call center. In April 2020, the in-person call center went remote. And they could compare it as a delta,
right?
As well as use the always remote call center as a control.
Right.
Because, you know, we were all traumatized by the pandemic, so certainly everyone's productivity dropped. But that is used as a control to standardize.
Yes, yes.
So after standardizing, they found that the in-person to remote call center had a in this case, 8% drop in productivity.
Wow.
So why are we using call centers? Because we don't work in call centers, right?
Mm.
The challenge is that you need a lot of data points, like thousands of people, and you need a before and after.
Mm.
So you need discrete output, which is a number of calls made, you know, customer satisfaction.
Yep.
So for you, the both of you, right, you don't have like 25 outputs a day, and there's not 10,000 of you.
And it's creative work. Like,
yeah, you don't have before and after. Yeah. So there's not enough data points.
Yes,
so the best data can be done on a discrete,
like a call center,
multiple outputs a day and single unit output, like a call center.
Right.
And I guess like for different companies, the output measure would be different also.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I mean.
So like knowledge workers have very different outputs, like yourselves, it's creative output versus data call center. I feel a lot more creative, innovative, and happy at home. So wouldn't my output be better, my productivity increase? But don't forget, businesses are stronger than solopreneurs and freelancers because of the teams. So yes, you may feel individually more creative and happy, but are you stronger as a team? The answer is probably no. Because there's isolation, there's silos, there's lack of communication. So you have to be very intentional, like, okay, let's meet at 3 p.m. for a Zoom call. But here you can like water cooler chat, you can go for lunch.
Yes.
I guess it's like an LDR versus a normal relationship.
Probably.
Yeah, also, really.
Some people will not want an LDR because there's distance, it's inconvenient. You have to put in special effort to keep it going as compared to a normal relationship. Yeah, it's kind of like that with remote work also. But you just LDR with a lot of people and you all don't do, you know, stuff that people typically don't do in...
Right.
Yeah. Typically do in relationships.
So given this like very statistical 8% drop, like, do you still think it's worth it that you went fully remote?
For me, you know, it's non-negotiable now after the pandemic that I be there for my kids when they come off the school bus.
Yeah,
I want to be there even in the morning when they go to school. I want to be there for them when they have have dinner together. So if these are my non-negotiables, then I feel that I want a firm that does that as well.
Even if it comes at a potential, a little bit of a loss.
And don't forget, in the pandemic, I started hiring overseas. So I have colleagues in Malaysia, in the Philippines, and in India. So it's kind of, now it's going to be like the office class versus the remote class. I felt that there'd be no point going to an office. I think many of you have experienced this. You go into an office only to Zoom with your colleagues. Many people tell
that's so depressing.
You know that, right? Yeah. It happens all the time now.
So maybe let's go to the remote thing later, like the fact that you're hiring overseas. But I'd like to go back to two points that I thought was very interesting. The first one being that as an employer, you are also oftentimes an employee as well.
Yes.
And I think that's the way that we think about our office, because we only have four people, so it's a bit harder to to apply to all companies.
I too also have a very small team, you know. Right. I'm now 18, so...
Right. 18 is still, to us, is big.
It's all relative, because I just had lunch with my friend who has a 3,000 person team, right?
That's so another,
I felt, oops.
So how we do it is that we used to work from home one day of a week. Mm. Now it's turning into 2 days of a week. So Wednesdays and Fridays we'll work from home. And the thought from that actually just came from Remy and I, like, we also don't want to, like, our office hours have always been very, like,
chill.
Like, very chill. Like, just come here by 10:30 and you can leave at 5:30. To a lot of people, they're like, wow, then do you have time even? But it's like, I don't want to wake up too early, rush in peak hour. And then also transport cost, if you're taking a cab, is more when it's peak hour. It's slower. You have to stand. It's not as enjoyable. So I'm thinking, if I want to extend this to myself, I think it'll be fair to run the firm like that, for that to be my culture. I don't mind having a small drop in productivity, because I also want this to be an enjoyable place. So now I find that when we come to work, we might get less done than if we just stayed at home, honestly. But it's nice to be with people.
It's more social, right?
Yes,
it's more
for
community, for bonding.
Just like vibes. Collect the vibes.
And vibes can be profitable too. It's just not as measurable or as immediate, but I think it's worth it. It makes it fun for me to come to work.
So I read in this book by Daniel Priestley that there are three kinds of teams. So there's the solopreneur, maybe you and your BFF run a company, like how you begin. And then there is a lifestyle business, which is what you're approaching. A lifestyle business is somewhat like a team of, say, 5 to 12, you know? Kind of everyone knows everyone. They're all direct report. There's no, they're all direct
it's
to the
flat,
boss. It's very flat. There's no hierarchy. And then the next jump, which is maybe 35 and beyond, so 12 to 35 and 35 to beyond, we are approaching a performance business. A performance business, which is a scalable business, has multiple hierarchical layers. So there's you, the C-suite, so-called. And then there's the middle manager. And then there is a direct reports, which are the executives. If you run your current business like you do right now, it's called a lifestyle business, which is actually what the way I run it as well. We can afford to have a lot of flexibility.
Right.
But when you actually start scaling beyond 35 packs, if you do that, you're going to see a lot of crazy things happen.
Yes.
Because, guys, I did that interview with CNBC when I went remote, and this journalist said, I want to interview you. And I said, oh, talking head. She said, no, I want to write a story on you. I said, dude, why is it so interesting? It's been 3 years in the pandemic.
Right.
And she said, actually, I'm writing more remote stories than ever. You know. So in after the story was published, Wei Chun, there were so many DMs. First of all, I got hundreds of CVs. Sorry, I cannot employ any of them. That was crazy. Hundreds of CVs came in. Okay, thank you for your interest in my firm.
I cannot reply all of them.
Cannot.
Too many.
I understand that there's appeal. But you should hear the other side of the story, guys. Okay. This is I have not talked about this, which is all the entrepreneurs sharing their horror stories.
And it makes sense, because like, if it's a small team, it's easy to QC the people. It's easy to do like a quality check. Make sure that there are no weirdos, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Like once you exceed a certain number...
You agree what I'm saying? You can QC your two colleagues.
I mean, four people, the moment somebody is not pulling their weight, like,
you can feel it because it's obvious.
But if it's like 25 people in the team, it might
like
be 50, harder to spot.
You know?
And then like, 100. The more number you hire, the more percentage of... Okay, then like, let's say there are 5% weirdos in the world out there, right? And you hire 100 people, then there'll be 5 weirdos.
It's not even the weirdos, which are pretty bad. I wouldn't want a weirdo on my team. You know, there are people who work extremely well in an in-person office and are completely gone in a remote office. Like, you never saw from them again, never heard from them again. And they collect a paycheck every month. And then they said, you know, I just didn't understand. This was my best employee. And suddenly they were gone. You know why? In my story, I said there are two non-negotiables for a good remote worker. You must be a strong virtual communicator. So if I message you, Wei Chun, and I'm your supervisor, you have to respond.
Of course.
But some people don't respond.
Right, it's just
Slack
not natural to them that virtually I will do that.
Yeah, or like someone's having a virtual birthday party on Slack. They will be like, they will never...
Don't show up.
They will like, happy birthday. Yeah, they don't show up.
Yeah.
So they disappeared from sight. Or there is a deliverable that's 1 week from now. They will disappear for a week. And then they will deliver it, but it could be wrong. So a good virtual worker will be like, hey, Ray-Ming, I just thought you could check out what I've been doing. Yeah,
it's more like iterative, lah, right?
Yeah,
it's
so they have to be like in an office, but virtually. You can do that on Zoom, on Slack, WhatsApp, I don't know, TikTok. You can.
Yeah, because in a physical office, you would naturally
have opportunities.
Like you walk around the table, hey, I notice you're doing this, can I have a look? And it just happens.
So a strong virtual communicator.
That's the first one.
Is important. The second one is strong and high accountability. Because you see, in an office, guys, you can see what your supervisor or your supervisee is doing. Is there such a word, supervisor?
Supervisee, yeah, also.
A direct report
is
doing.
Yeah,
but if remote, you can't see. So a highly accountable person will do the right thing even when nobody's watching.
Right. Mm.
Yep. So did you hire a giver or a taker? Because a giver will keep on giving when nobody's looking. But if you hire a taker, the moment nobody's watching them, they will take.
The take, yeah.
So that's like the second thing that is required for a strong worker. So back to the DMs I got. I've heard so many horror stories, and actually these employees were traumatized because they have to pay the bills and it's not working.
It's like being
right?
taken for a ride.
So sometimes there's a lack of trust. You know, I get lots of DMs from nice people, mostly women, telling me, my employer doesn't trust me, you know. I think it's unfortunate because most of us are trustworthy. We want to do the best we can. We are givers. But there's always these bad
eggs.
The takers
in the world,
are spoiling the market. Yeah. They're making our life. That's why the RTO exists, return to office.
Right.
It's for that 10%, 20%.
Mm. Well, I think you can't completely filter out a reality where there are no takers. So I think as a business, you just have to deal with the fact that these things will come.
So it makes sense, right? The lifestyle versus performance.
Mm. Absolutely.
So now you get why companies have to bring them back.
Absolutely.
Because after a certain point, you cannot manage all these people. Mm. Oh, and another reason why remote is less productive, there is one group of people who are the saddest in a remote environment. You want to guess who?
The extrovert people.
That is more like a social. I get it. I agree. I'm an extrovert.
I think the natural givers, maybe the people who automatically always like update people and be very diligent.
Sure. They feel a sense of isolation. It's true for everyone, even introverts, by the way. Actually, it is the middle managers. Because they have to manage both sides, but with no visual input. So they have to deliver the same productivity endpoints and outcomes to their bosses, right, as before. And they have to manage a bunch of people whom they can text and have no response from. They have to manage people who maybe have a 1 week to deliver the output, but 1 week later gives something that is completely wrong.
So they have to maintain output, but the observable data point is like something.
And there are people, playing cat and mouse game with them, hiding from sight, not responding to emails, responding to messages. I mean, I know employers who message and don't get responses for 3 hours.
Wow.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And the middle manager has to make all of them abide by the same company rules that we had in person, deliver the same output to the boss, and keep everyone happy, not burning out, and collegiate, and keep the community from, staying focused and not getting disengaged. And there are lots of people who are disengaged.
Yeah, even
in an in-person company.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're a middle manager, a remote company has more challenges for you than an in-person company, if you ask me.
So do you do those things like some companies I heard from my friends, like, they say you gotta switch on your app webcam while you work.
They even have like a typing sensor.
Yeah, to check that you're doing work.
So there's even like TikTok videos on how to fool these devices.
Oh yeah, of course.
They make something shake every 5 to 10 minutes.
So do you do that? Do you do that?
That stems from a lack of trust. The fact you did that, like someone checking your phone, means they don't trust you.
But I think from some of these employers' perspective, it could also be that I need some SOPs so that I can establish trust first. So maybe it's just separate from you, where they want you to prove first, then I trust you. Instead, I trust you first, then you break.
I think it should be the other way. You always start from trust until proven otherwise. If not, life is too hard to live.
Yeah,
you always cannot sleep at night, full of anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, also like my friends who told me about all these things, none of them are happy about it.
No.
They're not like, hey, so cool. They track when I'm working. They just like, hey,
you know how I do it. First of all, you have to let go. My mom always asked me, because my mom used to work in retail, she said, how do you know everyone is working?
Yes.
So she still asked me this three years later all the time. I said,
It's not like that anymore.
You hope that they're working.
Wow.
You hope that they're working.
You
believe that they're working. Right. But this is how I think of it, Wei Chun. I've thought about this. First of all, I had to let go. Mm. I had to let go of the control expectation. If not, I wouldn't enjoy remote work.
Mm.
Right? I'll be anxious.
Yes.
Right? The second thing is I have an awesome group of team leaders.
Managers. Right.
Who I know are setting the right expectations.
Mm. Yep.
The moment you have one low performer who you allow to persist, it spreads.
Yes, it infects
the whole team.
Because everybody else was working hard. But
they will feel like, right? Then, not fair.
Yeah. It's like broken glass, broken window theory, right?
Yes.
Someone fucks up, then everyone else
has
permission to fuck up.
Yes, so you have to make sure that you treat fairly the ones who work hard by eliminating those who are not playing ball.
Mm.
That's the first thing. Second thing is twice a year, performance review. Mm. I do twice a year. Mm. In fact, I used to do once a year until I learned that in the big Fortune 500, they're now going to four times a year.
Four times a year?
Yeah. So I said, oh my God, SME cannot be so old-fashioned. Yeah. So I went to two times a year. And I look at the output, you know, aggregate. And you can see for yourself who has been pulling. You can really see. 6 months is enough to see output.
Right.
If you say one day, not fair, right?
Mm.
One week also not fair.
Right.
6 months is fair.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. It's very obvious, guys.
Right.
It's very obvious. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting to hear, because we have such a small company that it's often just very clear to us immediately.
Yeah.
So the idea of doing it at scale, I would think the bigger you grow, the bigger, the more spaces and gaps there are for people to hide, you know?
So if you want to use, I want to continue what you said.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then so what?
Right.
If I'm a high performer and I can do it in 2 hours, it takes you eight, and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
So what I'm not saying, see, that's a giver and taker again.
Yeah.
I have people who are that great in my company. And even though they could do it in 2 hours, they'd be like, hey, I've got capacity.
Mm. Mm.
Can I help you?
They will naturally.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
Right.
So first of all, so what? Mm. If they can deliver the output, so what? It's good, right? Your experience led you to this date. But if you hire a giver, they'd be like, who can I help now?
Right.
What can I do to value add? Because I'm done.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I might even think that actually, if your company has a culture of being trusting upfront like that, you might be able to attract more givers naturally.
Yes.
Versus like on the upfront, like you come in then like, wow, actually in the interview, they'll tell you, oh, we'll actually lock your keyboard movement. You need to be in the webcam. Then I got another offer. So maybe I go over there instead. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like a cycle almost.
Being nice is a great way for SMEs to attract talent.
I would say so, because if you think about it, you know, given that we are all SMEs here, I think SME, what's the number of people to define an SME?
Actually quite crazy. I think it goes up to 500 or something.
That's more like M already. Small, we are S.
That's medium.
Yeah,
we are
small,
medium,
right? Yeah. Tiny, small,
micro,
medium.
Micro business.
I think that we have a lot of disadvantages when it comes to
MNC.
Mm. So I used to have a mentor who is one of the APAC head of a very famous big tech company. And he gave me a lot of advice, because I said, I cannot compete against you. If you make an offer on any of my staff, they will all leave me for you.
Mm.
Then actually he disagreed with me. He said, Juliana, that's because you're going head on with me.
Mm.
Ah, this is a really, really eye-opener for me.
Mm.
He said, if you go head on with me,
you lose.
You will lose.
Yeah.
Because I have a barrister.
Mm.
I have lunch.
Barrister.
Yeah, I even have a band to play music for them on Friday night. You know, you have nothing. He didn't say it like that. I'm paraphrasing.
But I heard saying that it kind of like narrows down the list of who the company
is.
Four of them, you can think of. So then he said, but you can look for people who value your lifestyle, which I can't give.
Right.
So they're all RTO already, you know. They have Zoom calls, guys. I'm talking about like, I know all some of these tech companies because they have Australia, they have Europe, and they have US. So they have calls maybe 8 p.m., 10, 12, 2 a.m., even 4 a.m.
Yep.
And then they start again at 9.
Mm.
So it's nonstop.
So if
you want a six-digit, you know, 100K salary, he will provide it.
Mm.
But in my case, I offer you freedom. I offer you 6 p.m. and we're out. because I'm out, you're out. I don't want to get emails from
you.
I offer you benign neglect.
Benign neglect. Yeah. I like that. Wow.
If you're a creative, I worked with some of my creatives for years. They said the best thing I like about you, Juliana, because they worked in other agencies, is you let me do what I do. I said, good, because I could not design to
just
save
get
my
out
life.
Of the way now, right?
Yeah. If you choose green and I prefer blue, I would think probably you're right. Because, you know, the only thing I might ask for is a bigger logo.
Right, right. That's fair.
It's a classic client
bigger
request.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not for me, the client will prefer.
But I think what's happening now, at least in the Singapore market, is like a lot of employers who should be nice to their employees, should be more flexible, should be more, you know, progressive. They're actually the ones that are very, very traditional, even more traditional than all these like big MNCs that are being progressive.
Fair enough.
And that affects like the talent that they get. And sometimes I think that you see a lot of complaints about SMEs online. I think it makes sense. Because the SME cannot afford to pay, then the people that eventually go there are people who, you know,
cannot get a lot of other things.
Yeah, cannot get other
so
ones.
You get what you give.
So in the end, like,
MFEO.
Then they meet in the middle, and then they fight about each other.
It's like plan C's meeting
so
plan C's.
It's a bit of supply and demand, right, guys? Yeah, in the end of the day, you get what you give, or the equilibrium always is reached at the end of the day.
You get what you are.
They say if you want to attract a good partner, you have to be the good partner.
Yes,
a bit of both. But maybe in defense of this class of SME employers, can I also just, you know, be fair and say, you know, some of them don't have the kind of training that MNCs can provide to the employers. So that, you know, the best practices, HR practices.
Right.
So I think there is also a room for all of us to improve and learn best practices, like from the Swiss. You know, they are really good. Some of the European companies, Japanese companies, American. You know, there's room for us to improve.
Right.
And learn best practices.
I mean, of course, I think there are very good reasons why these companies might be more traditional in that way. But then, you must also acknowledge that it does have an impact on what actually plays out in real life.
Actually, I have this crazy, bizarre theory. You want to hear?
Yeah.
So, I read online, actually on your blog, I see a lot of, I don't know how you guys do it, but strong mental health. So some people are very mad at SME owners, and thank you guys for doing a huge service to Singaporean knowledge, you know, trying to raise our financial knowledge. You're doing a great service.
Oh, thank you.
Guys, you do not know what you have right here, okay? Not paid to say this. So with regards to SME and employers, some people say, oh, my boss doesn't trust me to let me work remotely. But then at the same time, you know, so you want to work remotely, you don't want to work in the office, and then at the same time says, oh, we need to protect jobs from being taken away by foreigners. So you want your cake and eat it.
Right, right.
I just thought it's a little bit confusing, because when I see their complaints and opinions, I said, guys, do you not realize how confusing it is to me to see you say both of these things? So if you don't want to go back to the office, you want to work remotely, which is fine, then be prepared to be disrupted by anyone hungrier than you around the world. So instead of being grumpy and angry at your boomer employer who wants to see you in the office, actually realize that could be an opportunity.
Yes, that's your competitive advantage.
Yes, your competitive advantage. You're living
here. You're
present. So it's like, guys, you want to work remotely and you don't want to get disrupted by someone in another country around you. Make up your mind.
Yeah. Which one do you want? Right?
Which one do you want? Yeah. You know, they have to pay 17 or now 18% more in CPF to hire you just to see you.
Right, right.
So isn't that your privilege? Because if you work for another company overseas, they ain't gonna pay you any CPF.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
So right, I got baffled when I read it. What do you think? I know you have to respond. So.
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, our usual reply is like, if you don't like the job, leave. Right.
Fair enough.
So if they're already complaining about it long term, it means that they don't have the ability to leave. They're probably dealing with something difficult, I don't want to say like skill issue, but that's how the internet people would probably say, like skill issue. They can't
get good.
They can't go anywhere else, so they're like projecting their energy in the comment section. I mean, which is totally understandable. I have been that person before. So
So the best case scenario, right, Ray Ming, is I can work fully remote and you only hire people from Singapore. That's not going to happen.
Well, I mean,
right?
Because early on you mentioned like it's about getting people like hungrier than you, right?
Yes.
Because that's where the regional competition is. But it's also about hungry, I feel like it's just one aspect of it. You have to be higher up the value chain compared to, you know, someone in a...
Yes.
Yeah, because that's how you overcome the hungriness. You don't need to be as hungry as someone from Indonesia or Vietnam. Yes. But you do have to produce enough output to at least make sense for the employer. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's our USP. Yeah. I think Wei Chun was talking about it in the WhatsApp, which is that is our USP. Yeah. Our, you know, education, multilingual, our ability to follow SOPs and rules,
very organized. And in this thing also is our ability to be present physically. So go back office lah. I mean, that's your USP. Yeah.
So just now you mentioned that you hire people from overseas and Singapore, of course. Tell us a bit about like the remote worker part of things.
Okay, because I'm a knowledge company where, like yourself, we are mostly digital. In fact, I was forced to transition from a brick and mortar physical magazine company to a digital magazine company. So I have the benefit now of hiring people overseas.
Yeah.
I just thought I should put a disclaimer out there. This is not a cost issue. It's not about money. It's more about access to talent. You're a creative. You know how much Singapore promotes literature, design and arts, right? It's not something that we support. So it's very hard to find amazing creatives here. I can find some, but not a lot. And ever since being able to hire from overseas, I've widened my pool and I've discovered a huge number of amazing, talented individuals who can write, who can design, who can come up with ideas that I surprises me even right now.
You think you can give like some examples of like where they're from, what they do?
So, okay, I see. So I have some colleagues in Singapore. I also have some in Malaysia. Philippines and India.
Yeah.
And then once a year, we meet up for our annual retreat. So we just came back from Bali. We had a 3-day, 2-night retreat and we went to do yoga, whitewater rafting, a temple, visiting, dinners. You know, we were all crying at the end.
Why?
So, because it was fun. Trauma. Yeah, this is like the year before we went to Langkawi.
Oh, you cry if it's fun.
Because we see each other for the first time in a year.
Oh, it's tears of joy.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, what is the role split like? You know what I mean?
Everything. So I have 5 teams, in case you're wondering. I have my business team. I call it business development team. I have my Stratcoms team, which is my marketing social media team. I have a community team, which I call ecosystem. I have my publications team, and then I have my design team. So they can be from any country.
So is it, but do you kind the of teams, cluster it by country?
No. The teams, if it happened, it was not by plan. It can be anybody, anywhere.
But is there like a trend? Like, you know, for example...
Or regional time zone.
So if you refer your friend to join, then you obviously might refer a friend in the same country. But it was not intentional.
And how do you go about like looking for this foreign hire?
LinkedIn.
Just LinkedIn?
LinkedIn. Or once you hire one, they find their friends. So you ask them to, because people usually hang out with like-minded individuals. Right. So you hire a designer, you ask the designer to find another designer.
I'm interested in the previous point also, because we are creative. So you said like in Singapore, it's not about the money. That was an interesting point to me.
It's
because
not,
to me, that is the number one factor to go
overseas.
There's
one factor. Because geographical arbitrage, they call
of
it.
Course.
So you can use your high currency.
Of course, is so high.
That's one factor,
so
but not the only factor.
Right. But you are saying like the sheer number of range of creativity that you can get overseas
is a lot
this
more.
This
is the whole world versus 3 million.
Right. I mean, it's reasonable. But I think just to hear it would be interesting also. Because I think there are very highly creative and talented people in Singapore. But I do also agree that if you are just to constrain your scope to this for all the kind of work that you might do. Because the kind of work we do is very specialized.
Mine is even
specific.
More specialized, guys. You know, I do science.
Right.
And design or writing. You need both... You need two of those things, which are in itself hard to find. Individually are hard to find. Combined, it's even harder.
Right.
But I guess also your work can be more, I mean, doesn't need to lean on like elements of Singapore so often. That's why your creatives can be all over the world.
True.
And I think that is true for a lot of
regional
roles,
content, right? The book Salaryman is a fair bit of local knowledge.
I mean, a lot of it is based in Singapore.
Yeah.
But then I guess if you're creating, you know, let's just say you're not like well-type media for one. Let's just say you're a marketing agency creating...
Like LinkedIn-only content, right?
Yeah. Or even like FMCG stuff for Southeast Asia. Then you don't necessarily need a Singaporean.
True.
Right,
true.
To have Singaporean knowledge or a Singaporean background.
I agree.
Yeah. Wow. So is there any difference in the way that you treat people who are in Singapore and people who are not in Singapore?
Absolutely none.
Exactly
absolutely
the same.
None. It's the same. I mean, the only difference is if you are based here, I might be able to bring you out for lunch. But wow. I brought people in from
isn't
overseas.
That favoritism?
No, I actually bring them in. They if they are in KL, they just take a flight.
Of course, over. Yeah.
So
right.
easy.
Right,
then they hang out for 2 days and they go back.
But is it mostly regional or all around the world?
Only four countries. Singapore and the three other countries.
Oh.
So I recently brought my KL colleague and then my Manila colleague.
Mm.
And next May, I really plan to bring my New Delhi colleague over.
Mm.
Because they are here for different reasons. Sometimes it's bonding. Sometimes it's strategic planning.
Right.
Sometimes they speak at our summits.
Yep.
We run conferences for people in STEM.
Right. Mm. Is it expensive to fly people in, or is it from the money that you save from not having rental?
I think it's just necessity. You just spend because it's a part of your plan.
Well, right. Maybe
it's like an expense.
Like a HR
it's a business
fund.
Expense.
Right. I mean, yeah. HR is just fun for like bonding and
right.
wellness.
Or you can call it like it's a business expense. Mm. Yeah.
But what is the USP of a Singaporean worker like compared to a remote worker? Like for example, is it our command of English? You know, is it our understanding of the local scene, if you're working with local
is it
clients.
Our compliant culture?
Is it like, are you asking about Singaporean or Singapore?
Singaporeans.
So what about PRs? Which one is PR?
Yeah, I'm PR. Mm.
Okay, Singaporeans PR.
Yeah, Singaporeans and
Singaporeans
PRs, right?
PR, yeah.
You know, when you sent me that question, I actually thought about it, and I think it's actually very difficult to answer.
Mm.
I don't have an answer for that. You know why? Because we are referring to Singaporeans as like a one block.
Sure.
It's like a monolith, but we are very different. So maybe I, just for the sake of this discussion, I want to put it in two groups.
Mm-hmm.
Singapore and PR, in two groups.
Sure.
There is the ones with the global mindset,
mm.
if you know what I'm getting at, and mm-hmm. alluding to, and the like, 井底之蛙,
right.
Like,
he's right with you, yeah.
Like the frog mindset.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
No offense, just want to point out.
Yeah.
So does it mean you have to study or work overseas to have a global mindset? Absolutely not. I don't mean it like that. I mean, do you see Singapore as the be-all and end-all that you have to protect against everyone trying to enter?
Yep.
If that is the case, then you don't have a global mindset.
Yep.
And then there's another group, of course, which, okay, I understand that the world is porous, and even if I want to protect, companies can also have another team overseas.
Yes, yes.
So that group has a huge number of USPs.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, then I can talk about USP.
I see.
Mm.
So I mean,
you've talked about this before.
Yeah, we have talked about this. I mean, like from my point of view, from my experience, I think what I've noticed is that a lot of the intermediaries are like Singaporean. Like, so Singaporeans tend to be like a lot of like project managers,
yes,
account managers, between
middle managers.
Yeah, between like the creatives and then like there'll be some, let's say Australia or something.
Yeah.
So because of the language proficiency in English, a lot of Singaporeans are the middle ground, and they are able to communicate across different cultures.
So
I was looking for something like that, but I mean...
So you hit the nail on the head. That is our USP. We are perfect middle managers
people,
in an MNC.
Right.
And actually, there's more than that. It's actually like, first of all, geographically, we are right in the middle of East and West.
Yeah. Mm.
We have Eastern and Western cultural references. Mm. Like, I grew up watching Friends. You know, the sitcom.
Yes.
So I already kind of knew like, oh, at least on Friends, what the Americans like to do, you know, Hollywood movies. But we also like Korean, Japanese, Chinese series. So we are culturally bilingual or multilingual.
Yeah.
If you see the way our education system is run, it's the Cambridge education system. Mm. It's actually from the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's very organized. You know, the IB system,
yes.
International Baccalaureate is completely different. It's project-based, it's initiative, it's presenting. So the Cambridge system that we all were part of is all about, you know, getting really, really good and deep in one thing and just redoing it routinely and repetitively and well. So because we are used to, you know, rule of law, being very organized and being very
step
obedient,
by step, SOP,
so
follow
we
everything.
Can make things happen.
That's great.
We make things happen. And believe it or not, MNCs just need a lot of people. Like, if you do that, you can get paid like very well.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not talking about like low paid wage. I'm talking about 300K a year.
Right.
That should be enough for everyone.
I think that's
our USP.
Mm.
As a Malaysian or as a non-Singaporean at this table, I will completely agree. So that a lot of people say like, oh, Singaporean, like the perception of Singaporeans to the Malaysian, and my perception has always been, it's not the kiasu kiasi stuff, because Malaysian also quite kiasu, I think. It's more of the fact that I always think like Singaporeans are a bit more, what I put it down to is passive aggressiveness, but what that is, I think, is more like sterility and the ability to take emotions out of the thing. And like, I think we met an MP early on, like when we started work, and she said like, what she thought was Singapore's strongest export is compliance.
Oh.
Is that Singaporeans are great at following rules.
Yes.
And I've also heard like a previous boss of mine said that Singapore is like the Germany of Asia.
Probably.
Like very standard, can follow
very
the...
Very German, very Swiss also.
Yes, right.
And that's why we're the Switzerland of Asia.
Yes, exactly. So I think going like expanding beyond that to another question we wanted to ask was like... maybe that answers it a bit, you know, but what are some of the good things that Singapore can export? This is a really main question. Sorry,
yeah, it's fine. I think the question was more like, since now for some in the value chain, right, some of our jobs are being disrupted by people from developing countries. Yeah. So what I'm trying to ask is like, what are the jobs that we can disrupt other people at?
Oh.
So you see like last time, America manufacturing hub of the world, Japan, you know, took that away. Now that Taiwan did that to Japan. Then Singapore did that to Taiwan at some point. So I'm asking like, who can we disrupt? Or like, what kind of roles can we disrupt?
Okay, if you're talking about the macro level, like macroeconomic level, I'm not like, it's above my pay grade.
Mm.
But it's clear to see that we're going to high value, high knowledge industries like AI, data science, and so on. Although that has another story, because there are other countries that have massive AI workforces.
Yep.
So definitely AI, we need to get into that space. Fintech, blockchain, you know, you name it. All of those are, we don't need space for that. You just need knowledge, it's knowledge-based, and we are high knowledge economy.
Mm.
So that's like the macro answer. But on the micro answer, I've got another one.
Sure. Mm.
Because I think we, all of us, should become entrepreneurs.
Mm.
You're talking to someone who was a government scholar, and until 2018 was a professor, an assistant professor in a medical school. If I, at the age of 35, can reinvent myself to become an entrepreneur running a media company of all things. You know, I was a biologist, drug delivery researcher. Anyone can do it.
Okay, not anyone. The sweeping statement rests scary.
Okay.
Maybe like there should be
many of you can
20% more entrepreneurs, something like that.
Okay, this is why I think we should do it, okay? Yeah. Because it's so easy to start a company in Singapore.
Yeah.
You talk about advantage, right? Why can we disrupt? You can start a company in 3 days. It's like less than $100. If you do it yourself, it's zero.
Mm.
It's like $15.
Mm.
And you can, you know, there's rule of law. There is intellectual property
protections.
And people love to do business with Singaporeans because they know we won't run away with all their money.
Mm. Yes.
And people come to Singapore anyway
because
of F1 or something. So they love to visit us and they see us as people who are legitimate.
Trustable.
And then not only that, we can bring some of the ideas that we see in the West and bring it to the East, or things that work in the East and bring it to the West, because we are in the middle.
Right.
So we have so many advantages.
Mm.
And not only that, don't forget, as I mentioned, our currency is very strong.
Yes,
we can use that as geographical arbitrage and test our ideas out in the region using our strong currency.
Right, yeah.
But absolutely. First, you must have the global mindset.
The global mindset, So we cannot see every change that happens to us as an assault. We have to ask ourselves, how can we make the best out of this?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think people don't get to have a global mindset?
Fear. I think true fear. Because, okay, I'll give you an example, right? Like, when I was at 18, I had never, my parents are, you know, they didn't go to college, they are solopreneurs. My mom ran an optical shop selling sunglasses in Lucky Plaza for 35 years. And I was a sales girl in her shop. So I had seen, you know, generations of customers from all over the world. I've seen every ethnicity, every nationality, age group. And I've seen like some really terrible, you know, toxic and abusive. I've seen everything.
Mm.
So when I went overseas, I wasn't so like, raw, but when I went overseas, I had one specific mindset, what I was trained to, like I knew that the world ran in a certain way.
Mm.
And when I told people like a fact, like, oh, this is how things are done, I have people laughing at me.
Yes.
They're like, you're, I mean, they say words like, you're silly, Juliana, that's absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
And then it completely like confounded me, it's like cognitive dissonance. Like what? But that's how the way the world works. Mm. So this is what I mean by the global mindset. As long as you're willing to accept that the way you were brought up, the things that you believe to be the holy grail, it may not be true.
Yeah.
And you don't have to agree with
me. May not be true for everyone.
Yeah, but at least you're willing to listen. And say, could I be wrong?
Yeah.
Or is there another way to do it which could be better?
Right.
Yeah. Can I share with you something a little bit vulnerable?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know,
well, you're going to share with, like, you know, our
followers. I want to share because sure, Rui Ming, actually, Rui Ming helped me a lot. So I did this podcast for myself about job hopping. And then it was like, it went viral on TikTok and it went on Asia One. And then I asked Rui Ming for help. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember. It was earlier this year, right?
He did a Zoom call with me and he's like, it's okay, Juliana, it's okay. So I had a lot of time to reflect. So in my post, I said, why do people job hop? Because I'm from a generation that, you know, 3 to 5 years is a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
Even 2 to 3 years. But now I'm seeing cases like 6 months, right? 1 year. And then after a lot of thought, right, Rui Ming, I realized, why can I change? Why is that bad? You know what I'm saying? Can I just shift my mindset and open my mind? So after that, I went through a complete change in my mindset. I tell my Gen Zs, this is for Gen Zs, I say, I do not know how long you will stay with me, but I want you to know, for the time you are with me, I will look after you as well as you can, and when you leave, I will support you. And I want you to stay in touch and don't be a stranger.
I think that's the way.
So it's like, once you release the control and expectations, then everyone is a lot happier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then ironically, they stay longer.
Yes.
I have them staying like 2 to 3 years.
And I think, like you said, actually this is the way to keep them. It's like you treat it so that their time in the company, we will help you see it as a stepping stone to what you actually want.
Yeah.
I'm not going to assume that the work assignment is your dream job. And I remember going for all these interviews in the past, and it's like, the company will ask you, where do you see yourself in 5 years? The subtext being
another
that,
company.
Yeah, you should answer that, oh, I would have progressed within your company. But I mean, how often is that true? So it's great that you can see that POV also, because I think, like, not to say that we are old, but I feel like when I tell my parents what we do, for example, for work, they're worried. Because for their generation, the most prominent factor when they considered work was stability. That was the important thing for them. So they don't see why I would eschew a good job opportunity with stability in a big company to start my own thing. The thing for us, I think, is prominent in our generation is meaning. We want meaning. And then ikigai. I think for Gen Z, ikigai, right? And for Gen Z, I think it might be a different thing altogether. I don't know what it is. My feeling that is like freedom or flexibility. That's why job hopping is not such a big deal to them. They want to try things out, and they're also still quite young. So it also shocked me, because I teach part-time at NTU. Then like I'll ask them, what do you expect from remote work, coming back to remote work? And I would be so shocked that almost like 80% of them would expect to have like a 3-day work week, 3-day work from an office. And I'm like, guys, this is not the reality, probably. But it does shift a bit. And our office landscape has shifted a bit. And now we are seeing millennial employers kind of like conflicting with Gen Z employees already. We see it. So it's in the way that we millennials also struggle with boomer bosses.
So to add to not only the mindset shift, right? First of all, if you expect someone to stay 2 to 3 years and they stay a year, you get disappointed.
Yes.
So the shift happens, okay, I don't expect you to stay.
Right.
I just encourage you to, and I would love for you to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, you got to set up your systems such that you don't expect them to only become productive after 3 years. You know that in an employee life cycle, sometimes the training in some MNCs take up to 6 months.
Yep.
So if they leave in 6 months, it's actually quite terrible for all the SOPs and the productivity.
Yes, yes,
so I have other employers telling me, you know, they train someone for 4 months and they left at the end of the training period.
They're very devastated
because don't forget they have a trainer who has to train them, usually the direct supervisor. So then they're back to square one. I mean, if you are a middle manager and doing that, you'll be very devastated too. You know, it's not a judgment here. It's just lost time and productivity.
I think bringing back to it to remote work, I think a lot of it is really empathy, understanding. Like, I mean, earlier you talked about understanding people's point of view from other parts of the of the world, right? I mean,
or generations.
Yeah, then if you want to succeed in the company, it's about understanding what your middle managers' KPIs are, what they want. That's how you can manage upwards. If you don't have empathy, or you only want to, like, Chinese is like 很重, zichuang, right?
Yeah.
Only do your own thing and like just whack your way. You don't really care about what other people think.
Yeah.
Then you will never be able to see outside your... You only be able to think about yourself. And then you're screwed, right?
Actually, since we are talking Cheng Yu, right? Mm. My Chinese is not that good. But my mom always taught me one Cheng Yu that I use everywhere. It's Yi Tui Wei Jing. It saved me so well in life. If you're 你横冲直撞, right, you keep banging against the wall. 以退为进, you take a step back, you take a step forward. So if this is not working, I always tell my managers who have client servicing roles, if you cannot just keep banging at a wall to get the deliverable, you need to take a step back and take a detour and try to find another route around the rock.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess many Singaporeans are feeling stuck. Mm. Because of, I mean, they've been trying like the same thing over and over again for a long period of time. They're like, oh, why am I not promoted?
Yeah.
How come this foreigner, you know, taking my job? How come this person can manage me? Mm. It's because they're not playing the game that they should be playing.
Yitui waiting. Yes. So if it's not working for you, try something else. Mm. Keep trying something else until something works. So I think that's part of the changing jobs, right? I believe in the philosophy. So first of all, the changing jobs part, just to be clear, if it's like a toxic environment, it's not working, please change it right away.
Yes, absolutely.
And if it's not working and it's not playing up to your strengths, definitely change the job.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't even hesitate.
That's great. I think a great discussion. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that we can have more discussions with you. Is there anything you want to plug, like when it comes to your social media?
Before I plug my social media accounts,
yeah.
I just thought I want to let you all know how much these two guys have really supported me.
Okay,
yeah. Because first of all, like when I started my own podcast, Wei Chun was my first guest. We talked about Ikigai. If you want to listen to that, it's a really, really good episode. There are clips also on TikTok and Instagram. Juliana Chan, PhD.
The Science of Work. That's the name of the podcast.
The podcast is called The Science of Work. And also, Ray Ming, he helped me edit my LinkedIn Success Mindset ebook. So without his edits, I couldn't launch my ebook.
Like she sent you, but she actually paid me for it.
Yeah. That's okay. The point. Yeah. Basically, the brief was, Ray Ming, can you make it readable by your audience? Because, you know, my academic writing may not work for everyone. So he helped me out a lot, break my long sentences. So I guess that's it. I just really want to thank the both of you. And if anyone wants to follow me, I've started doing skits on Instagram and TikTok, mostly work-related branding and LinkedIn, which I'm very active on. So Juliana Chan, PhD, is my moniker. Juliana Chan is taken by someone, okay?
Oh, so that's why you had a PhD.
Yeah, so I wanted to be PhD.
Okay.
On LinkedIn, sorry. Right. Then, other than that, so I thought I'd be consistent.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Juliana.
Thank you, Wei Chun. Thanks, Wei Ming.
Yes, we have fun.
In case we are so persuaded by the pros of remote work that our company drift further and further, but until we remote, until we're no longer in the same company,
and no longer friends.
No longer friends.
Yeah.
This will be the final episode of the Work Simon podcast. But if not, we'll see you in the next one. Thanks for joining us.
Teardrop.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.